disguise, but I can see the devil hiding in the circles around your eyes. And what do I signify when lifetime's away? I can see that look in northern faces, and looks are made from far off places.
Chapter 19, Devil's Resting Place.
And maybe life waits over the hill while I wait. And maybe life waits over the hill while I wait. And maybe life waits over the hill while I wait. And maybe life waits over the hill
On the fourth day of the trial, Obi-Wan Kenobi's Temple Guard escort to the Council Chamber had thinned enough that he was visible through the ranks, a trim figure in dark robes who never hesitated in his easy stride. Ahsoka hoped that, in the unlikely event that she was ever in the same position, she had half that much composure. She and Barriss watched him pass from their perch on top of one of the plinths in the Great Hall, the massive statue of a long-dead Grand Master looming above them. There were fewer Jedi in the Great Hall than there had been the previous few mornings, but there were still dozens, lurking amongst the columns lining the hall and in front of the closed front doors, where the knights on gatekeeper duty stood as their forerunners had done for time out of mind. Ahsoka didn't really know what they expected to see, since Kenobi's passage the previous 2 days had been without incident, but maybe they were here for the same reason she and Barriss were. To see something. Anything. She didn't even know why they were here, except that it felt wrong to just go on with her life as if nothing had happened. There were still classes, and plenty of sparring partners and combat simulators if that was what she wanted, but it just felt wrong. It wasn't as though Ahsoka could do anything, either to help Kenobi or... At least she and Barriss believed him. There should be someone here who did. I think something's going to happen today, Barriss said. I can feel it. Ahsoka reached into the Force, let her mind drift along the eddies and flows of it. It had been clouded for days now, which she might have attributed to the trial if she didn't know for a fact that it had been like that since before the Battle of Naboo. She couldn't feel Kenobi down beneath her. The collar he was wearing blocked him from the Force. But she could feel something. A change in the wind. The way she could smell a storm before it arrived. Or the way her mantras picked up the echo of disturbed space far in the distance. You're right, she told Barriss. Maybe they'll have a verdict today. Where the invasion force will arrive. Barriss clasped her hands on top of her knees, watching the procession pass through the Great Hall. Ahsoka had almost managed to forget that there was a world outside the temple. She wasn't used to being cooped up the way everyone had been since the Jedi Task Force had returned from Naboo, and it added a faintly unreal quality to everything that was going on. The entire galaxy seemed to have narrowed down to the temple and the events going on inside it. What do you think? She asked. Do you think they'll find him innocent? Barriss made a face, the diamonds tattooed across her nose and cheekbones shifting with the motion. Well, he isn't exactly innocent, is he? He might not be guilty of being a dark Jedi, but he's certainly guilty of something. I know, but he's on trial for being a dark Jedi. Barriss frowned a little. If that was all, then this wouldn't have taken so long. You can feel it in the Force, can't you? If someone's gone to the dark side. That's what I was always taught, Ahsoka said. She sighed, anticipating Barriss's next question, and added, Master Plo hasn't really said anything about it. When I asked, he said that Captain Kenobi has been, quote, less than forthcoming on some matters, and rather too forthcoming on others. Whatever that means. They're probably asking him about what he does for Queen Amidala, Barriss offered. I heard someone say that he admitted to killing people on her orders. Assassinations. Even back when he was still a Padawan, during the occupation. I heard that, too. Ahsoka looked down, where Captain Kenobi's bright head was just barely visible amongst the dark hoods of the guards surrounding him. The procession was almost at the other end of the hall now. He probably knows all kinds of secrets about Naboo and the Seppis. That's probably what he isn't telling the council. Treason. Barriss's mouth tightened for a moment. Ahsoka stared out at the hall. Nothing had happened. Nothing like the riot that had nearly occurred on the first day of the trial. And the Jedi who had turned out to watch Kenobi's passage were beginning to disperse. She and Barriss needed to go soon. They'd combat simulator rooms on Master Plo's suggestion. Why him and not Chancellor Dooku? She asked. Barriss looked at her in surprise. No one thinks the Supreme Chancellor is a traitor to the Republic. That's impossible. Captain Kenobi is, though. Has to be. Depending on your point of view, Ahsoka said, then sighed as the procession finally left the Great Hall. I hope you're right, and this is all over soon. She leapt down from the plinth, landing in a crouch on the floor before straightening. Barriss followed her down. I just want my master back, she said. If it takes giving up Kenobi to get her, then so be it. The palace's indoor combat simulator room was the size of a chinbread arena, designed to reconfigure itself into a constantly changing obstacle course, either at random or at the user's will. At the moment, it had taken the form of a fairly ordinary firing range with a few obstacles, probably because it was only occupied by one person. Queen Amidala was standing on the line marked on the floor, firing downrange at the holographic targets of half a dozen commando droids who were attempting to charge her, bouncing off the walls and the obstacles provided by the range exactly the way real commando droids would. Obi-Wan stood back by the door, along with the two handmaidens there, Dorme and Sabe today, until she had finished, firing her last two shots at an almost point-blank range. The final commando droid exploded in a shimmer of holographic cubes, the range returning to blank form as the obstacle slid into the floor. Amidala looked down to check the charge pack in her blaster as Obi-Wan approached. "You wanted to see me, Your Majesty?" Amidala glanced up. She wasn't wearing her face paint, and it was startling how much she looked, and at the same time, didn't look, like Padme. The thin red line of the wound above her left eye was clearly visible now, especially with her hair pulled back from her face in a long, multi-stranded braid. She was dressed identically to her handmaidens, in dark gray leggings and a long purple tunic, sleeveless and split in front to allow freedom of movement. Obi-Wan didn't recognize the vambraces she was wearing, but he could feel a faint shimmer of electricity in them through the Force. Not just a pretty piece of jewelry, then. She clicked the safety back on her blaster, pressed a button on the room control strip she was wearing on her left vambrace, and took a step to one side as an armory stand rose up out of the floor, a panel sliding back to reveal a selection of blasters and other ranged weapons. Amidala replaced the ELG-3A pistol she was holding and removed a DC-15A heavy blaster rifle, making Obi-Wan raise his eyebrows, since the weapon was almost as tall as she was. The Queen hefted it without any apparent discomfort. "You aren't one of those Jedi who doesn't believe in blasters, are you?" "I've been shot at enough times that I have no doubt of their existence," Obi-Wan said, and saw the corners of her mouth curve upwards in a smile. "I don't carry one as a matter of course, no, but I'm familiar enough with them." Amidala tilted her head at the armory. "Pick one." Obi-Wan stepped around her to inspect the weapons available, then took the sniper rifle out, taking a moment to familiarize himself with the weapon and check the charges. The Queen leaned the DC-15A against her hip, considered the remaining options, and finally pulled out an S-5 blaster pistol, which she stuck through her belt loop. Pick another. Obi-Wan eyed her thoughtfully, but took a DC-17 hand blaster more out of familiarity than preference, since that was the weapon that most clone officers carried, and he had some experience with it. Since he didn't have a holster for it, he stuck it through his belt, as Amidala had done, shifting to make sure that it wouldn't come free immediately, as the Queen sent the armory sinking back into the floor. She tapped a series of commands into the room control on her wrist, Obi-Wan frowning a little as the room shivered, then began to rearrange itself. "May I ask what we're doing, Your Majesty?" "We're shooting things," Queen Amidala said. Somehow, Obi-Wan had guessed that, but since the Queen didn't seem inclined to elaborate on the subject, he didn't think it would be productive to continue that line of questioning. Instead, he just said, "I'm better with a lightsaber than a blaster." "I don't want you to use your lightsaber," Amidala said. She raised a dark eyebrow at him, clearly waiting for him to protest. "As you wish, Your Majesty," Obi-Wan said, picking up the sniper rifle again. The room chimed as it finished configuring itself, then began to sound tones that gradually increased in pitch as it counted down to the beginning of the scenario. Obi-Wan settled the stock of the rifle against his shoulder, taking in the new shape of the room as he watched the Queen from the corner of his eye. The room had gone dark, with a faint glow of light whose source Obi-Wan couldn't identify. Walls had grown up out of the floor, obscuring the opposite end of the room and the door he had entered through. Automatically, he reached out through the Force to get some idea of what their opponent was, but he couldn't sense anything. "Are we attacking or defending?" he asked the Queen. The last tone sounded. The Queen listened to it for an instant, then said, "Attacking." If Obi-Wan had known that, he would have chosen something other than a sniper rifle, but it was too late for second-guessing now. "Is it worth it to tell you to stay behind me?" he asked, and saw the flash of her smile in the gloom. "You can say whatever you like, Master Jedi," she said. "I can't make any promises." "I would expect nothing less, Your Majesty," Obi-Wan said. He could feel something stirring up ahead now, beyond the maze of walls the room had thrown up, and a faint clicking sound. Something with far too many legs for comfort made him tense. "Try and stay behind me, if you can restrain yourself." Amidala smiled again. There was an edge to it that he had never seen in Padme's smiles, and that made this easier somehow. Made it clear to him that whoever this woman might be, she wasn't the Padme Amidala he knew. "I'll try," she said, considered the maze up ahead, then said, "Let's switch rifles." Obi-Wan took the DC-15A from her and handed over the sniper rifle, taking a moment to accustom himself with the unfamiliar weight of the heavy blaster rifle. Anakin would have been completely hopeless in this situation. He was a terrible shot, despite all of Obi-Wan's tutoring in the matter. There was definitely something coming, he thought, and started forward into the maze. Amidala followed him, her booted steps soft and nearly soundless behind him. They had barely gone 5 steps when the first attack came. Obi-Wan took 1 step back and sideways, pivoting to put his back to the wall as he fired upwards. There was a sharp retort from the sniper rifle as the Queen fired, and a buzz droid exploded in a shower of holographic cubes. Dozens of them came down from above, skittering across the ceiling and along the tops of the walls, and Obi-Wan and the Queen shot their way through them, pushing forward through the maze. The sniper rifle ran out of charges before the Deese did. The Queen slung it over her shoulder and switched to the S-5 blaster she had chosen. Somehow, Obi-Wan wasn't surprised that she was just as good a shot as Padme was. The buzz droids were followed by battle droids, making Obi-Wan's hands itch for his lightsaber. But Amidala didn't want him to use it, so he didn't reach for it. He shot his way through the droids, at one point using the Deese as a club when two droids got too close. He battered one to death, the hologram registering the damage of each blow until he hit the right point, and Queen Amidala shot the other one, the blast going off so close to his ear that Obi-Wan was temporarily deafened. He swung the Deese over his back when he ran out of charges, switching to the hand blaster. There seemed to be a never-ending amount of battle droids, occasionally interrupted by more buzz droids, and, on one memorable occasion, a massive spider droid that climbed over the walls and nearly put a leg through the queen before Obi-Wan sent her flying out of the way with a push of the force. She landed in a 3-point crouch, her blaster already up and firing as Obi-Wan threw himself into a backflip to land on top of the spider droid, putting 3 rounds into its chassis and sliding free as it collapsed beneath him. Hologram or not, it felt real, even if the force didn't affect it. There was another spider droid waiting at the end of the maze. Obi-Wan slowed, aware of the queen at his shoulder. But the thing didn't advance, just clicked meaningfully at them and spat out a burst of laser blasts that landed near their feet. Amidala considered the thing, then stepped out from behind Obi-Wan and strode forward, firing as she went. Obi-Wan bit back his shout of protest, because her first shot had struck the spider droid's targeting array dead center, and her next 6 brought it down before it exploded in the now familiar burst of holographic cubes. The lights came up, the walls sliding back into the floor. Amidala lowered her blaster, turning back to Obi-Wan with a grin that slid away after an instant. Her disappointment hummed in the force, and he looked down. Her voice very quiet, Amidala said. You're very like him. I'm sorry, Obi-Wan said, not entirely sure what he was apologizing for, but knowing that he had to. So am I. She walked back towards the opposite side of the room, tapping her wrist controls so that the armory stand reappeared. You're also very good with a blaster for a Jedi Knight. I was undercover as a bounty hunter last year, Obi-Wan explained, following her. There are a limited number of knights good enough with anything other than a lightsaber to do something of the sort. My partner couldn't have done it. But Qui-Gon trained me to be prepared for anything. I know. The queen looked back at him, her expression a little sad. I have, on more than one occasion, been very grateful for the fact that Obi-Wan Kenobi wasn't trained as a typical Jedi would have been. She reached the armory, putting the blaster pistol back inside and sliding the rifle off her shoulder to return it to the rack it had come from. She held out her hands for the weapons Obi-Wan was carrying, and after a moment, he surrendered them to her. You aren't the only one, he said, then gave in to curiosity and added, I hadn't thought that the Queen of Naboo need concern herself over much with doing her own fighting. I don't, as a general rule, Amidala said, tapping a control on her wrist. The armory slid back into the floor, and she turned towards the door through which Obi-Wan had entered, where her handmaidens were still waiting. But I have in the past, not just during the occupation, and I'd rather not be unprepared should I need to do so again. Will you walk with me, Master Jedi? Of course, Your Majesty. He fell into step beside her. Amidala stripped the room control off her wrist and passed it to Dorme as they neared the door. Obi-Wan glanced at the handmaidens, wondering if they had some clue of why the queen had asked him here, but their expressions were carefully impassive. Leaving the Jedi Order broke Obi-Wan's heart, Amidala said, her voice still quiet. He didn't want to do it, but he told me that he had to, that he couldn't trust them anymore, and that he wouldn't be party to the decisions that they had made about Naboo during the occupation and after the liberation. There were other things that he said, but they betrayed him, and he couldn't forgive that, even though he wanted to very badly. Obi-Wan looked down, studying the tiled pattern of the floor as they emerged into a wide, airy corridor. Palace guards were stationed along it at regular intervals, each of them coming to attention as the Queen passed by. "I can understand that," he said. "Anakin's former Padawan made the same decision last year, though under different circumstances." Amidala looked at him in surprise, but didn't comment on it. "The Jedi Order has never forgiven him for leaving," she said. "Even before Naboo seceded, even before we began to discuss it. Since then, they've wanted his head on a stick. And now they have him." Obi-Wan had an uncomfortable feeling that he knew where she was heading with this. "Your Majesty, I haven't finished yet, Master Jedi." Her gaze flickered sideways towards him. After a moment, he nodded, and she continued. "I've been looking into that matter we discussed the other day." "Palpatine." "And?" "You're right. There isn't much evidence. But what there is compelling." She touched her finger to what Obi-Wan had taken for a knot of embroidery on her right vambrace, the air around them shimmering as a privacy field activated.
"You don't trust her handmaidens?" he asked quietly.
"More than I trust you," Amidala said. "But I'd rather keep this between us for now, Master Jedi. Some of my handmaidens can be a little rash. I'd rather not put them in harm's way by setting them on a possible Sith Lord if I can help it." Obi-Wan dipped his head in acknowledgement.
"What did you find, Your Majesty?"
"Not much. I can trace most of his movements on Naboo over the last 3 years, but nothing before, since he was on Coruscant then. There are a few suspicious absences, but nothing definitive. I'm having someone at Glasswater look into his finances and communications. Very routine, no red flags that will get his attention. He does own some off-world property, including holdings on several Alliance worlds, but with the holonet down, I can't get anyone out to look at it. I did pull Obi-Wan's recordings of his communications with Darth Sidious, but it's hard to get anything useful off of those. Stars know we both looked hard enough 10 years ago.
"Is there a chance we could get copies of those?" Obi-Wan asked. "Anakin and I may be able to find something you missed."
"I'll arrange it," the Queen said, after a moment's thought. "Irte's team at Glasswater House found something very interesting in the files Bail Organa stole from Republic Special Operations." Her mouth tightened. "As Supreme Chancellor, Palpatine set up several operations on Naboo that remained active after he left office. Not only is the Republic supplying credits and arms to most of the major dissident groups in this system, they have spies here reporting directly to SOB. There are notes in several files about Palpatine personally recruiting assets in the upper levels of the system's government, some of whom are still active today. Every time I think I've weeded out the last traitors." She shook her head, clenching a fist in frustration. "After Naboo seceded, Palpatine should have informed me of this. He did not. That's treason at the very least."
"What will you do?"
"Under normal circumstances, I'd strip him of his position, put him in a cell, and arrange a fast trial before having him shot for treason. But these aren't quite normal circumstances, are they?" She looked aside. "Even if he's only a traitor and nothing more, I can't just toss the former Supreme Chancellor of the Republic aside. If it was just Naboo I had to be concerned with, I could. But he has a great deal of influence with some of the other members of the Confederacy. His position isn't one of much power, but over the years he's cultivated a great many friends, both here and in the Republic. And he knows enough that if he ever decided to run to the Republic, or even the Alliance, or Ancestors, one of the other systems in the Confederacy, then he could do real damage to Naboo. There's just not enough proof that will give me reason to act with overwhelming force. If Obi-Wan was here, but he isn't,
I need something definitive before I can even strip Palpatine of office, let alone arrest him. And that's just for the treason, not for anything else. She tapped a finger against her chin. Contrary to popular opinion, I'm not an absolute ruler, especially when it comes to matters in the Confederacy rather than in the Naboo system. Here on Naboo, my word is law, but that's not as popular an opinion as you might think. You and your friends have been rather cooped up in this palace, I'm afraid, and my poll numbers are higher in Theed than almost anywhere else on Naboo, save for the military bases. There's a lot of history behind that, which I won't trouble you with, though you can look it up if you like. There's also a reason that my marriage isn't public knowledge. She glanced at him, color briefly in her cheeks. It's common knowledge that Obi-Wan and I have been lovers since the occupation, but most of that comes from rumor. We've been careful in public because the Jedi aren't very popular on Naboo, and there are some people who believe that he never truly left the Order. Nonsense, of course, but... She shrugged. What people believe matters. I'm well aware of that, Your Majesty, Obi-Wan said, thinking about rumor upon rumor back at the Jedi Temple, in the Senate building, all of the Republic poring over the Holonews gossip pages about Jedi Knights and senators and celebrities as though there wasn't a war on. About throwing a reporter into a wall when he had said something snide about Padme and Anakin in the raw, awful days after Odrin, when nothing had felt real but the words could still sting. Amidala turned to consider him, then nodded. There are a few members of the old regime still in the Naboo government, she said. Anyone stupid enough to act openly against me has already been caught years ago, so the only ones left are the smart ones. Most of them have political ties to Palpatine. It's a matter of interest, but I've had to let it slide in the past because he seemed willing to bring their concerns to me so I can act before it gets violent again. Again? Her mouth tightened. The last time, one of my handmaidens took a blaster bolt for me and 12 people were executed for treason, including the governor of Omadun. The first time, Obi-Wan was stabbed at a court event and nearly bled to death in my lap. And that was only 2 weeks after the occupation ended. Her hands closed into fists, and Obi-Wan didn't need to reach into the Force to taste her rage. Her memory so close to the surface of her mind that he could feel the hot rush of blood over her hands, a scream ripping at her throat. Amidala looked away from him, as if she had realized what he had sensed. Palpatine has contacts in those groups that have proven very useful for me in the past. I've got contacts of my own, but not to the extent that he does. Some of what he fed me was the truth, at least, and prevented the loss of more life. She considered. And caused the loss of some life, since I execute traitors. Obi-Wan swallowed, a little unnerved by her casual tone. Where is Palpatine now? Still off-world. I sent him to represent the Crown at the bomb sites on the moons and the orbital platforms, and told him to take his time. She shook her head. I swear, that man lives to drive me utterly mad. He's worse when Obi-Wan isn't here. If he makes one more comment about my condition, I may rip his blasted head off if Sabe doesn't do it first. She sighed. I've restrained the urge for 13 years now. I'm sure I can do it a little longer, as long as he can restrain his tongue. Do you know when he'll be back, Your Majesty? A day or so. The Congress finally condescended to decide on a time and place for the emergency session that was supposed to immediately follow the Republic's declaration of war. She rolled her eyes. We travel separately, but he'll return to Naboo first. There's a council meeting he's needed at before then, so the rest of the Royal Advisory Council can give him the list of grievances Naboo is supposed to air in front of the Congress. As if that will do any good. Amidala's gaze flickered towards him. Mom was shy, and she added quietly, I admit that under the circumstances, I'm glad that Congressman Palpatine isn't aware that Obi-Wan is missing. Obi-Wan rubbed a hand over his beard. I can't keep this ruse up forever, Your Majesty.
It's already beginning to falter.
I know. They went on for a few more paces, past tall windows that looked out on a garden filled with tranquil pools, bright flowers, and a statue of a fierce-looking woman Obi-Wan didn't recognize. At last, Amidala said, "You and your friends have asked very little from me, save shelter in your situation, and you have been a very great help. Greater than I deserve, perhaps."
Obi-Wan looked at her sharply.
"Your Majesty, I will not take up arms against the Republic or against the Jedi."
Amidala held up her hands.
"I would not ask that of you, Master Jedi," she said. "I did not ask it of my husband, and I would not ask it of any Jedi if another ever despaired of the Republic and came to me. But you and your partner are Jedi."
He looked down.
"Yes," he said. "We are that."
Something about the way he said it must have gotten her attention, because he felt the Force shift, curiosity shimmering across the surface of her mind.
"Are you a good Jedi, Master Kenobi?"
It was the first time that she had said his name, and maybe for that reason alone Obi-Wan gave her honesty.
"Not as good as I could be," he said. "Not as good as I wish I was."
"Because of her?"
"Because of him. Because of the choices I made."
Amidala nodded, as if that answer meant something to her. And maybe it did. 10 years was a long time to be married to a man who had been a Jedi once. "For the sake of honesty," Obi-Wan added, "Anakin and I are very, very good at what we do, though."
"I can't imagine any Obi-Wan Kenobi being anything less," she said.
For a moment, she looked sad, a small, beautiful woman fiddling with her wedding ring in the middle of the corridor.
"If my husband is on Coruscant, if the Jedi are keeping him from the Senate..." "Your Majesty, Anakin and I can't..."
"My lady!"
The privacy field shattered as one of the Queen's handmaidens broke through. Kine was flushed and out of breath, but there was a bright, triumphant gleam in her eyes.
"You weren't answering your comlink," she said reprovingly, as the Queen turned towards her, arching her eyebrows.
"What is it?"
"The First Fleet's made contact," Kine said. "I told comms to put them through to the holoconference room in the Royal Suite. They aren't sure how long the connection will hold."
"Urgent?" Amidala asked, turning back in the direction Kine had come.
Kine said, "Senator Organa seemed very worried about something, but he won't say what until you arrive."
"Then I'd better hurry."
With so many Jedi packed into the temple, tempers were running high and training accidents were up. The halls of healing weren't full. Ahsoka didn't want to know what could possibly fill the massive complex up. But there were plenty of Jedi there, being treated for everything from minor scrapes sustained in play, for the younglings, to lightsaber burns, for everyone else.
"Is it just me, or is everyone clumsier than usual?" Ahsoka asked Barriss, as I sat on an empty exam table and waited for an available healer.
Barriss had fallen badly in one of the simulator rooms, missing her catch on one of the beams and plummeting the 10 meters to the floor. She and Ahsoka had both inspected her injury, and while it could have been worse and either of them could have patched it up without too much trouble, since they were in the temple, there was no reason not to go to a real healer.
"It's not just you," Barriss said.
She looked around the half-full room thoughtfully. Mostly Padawans who had done something equally stupid and were being lectured by their masters for it, while healers wrapped up their ankles and dispensed Bacta. Then reached up to push back the hood of her robes, revealing her cap of close-cropped black hair and her Padawan braid.
"The Force is clouded, and everyone is making amateur mistakes because of it. Even the knights, not just us. Can't you feel it?"
It was the same thing she had said to Ahsoka this morning, and Ahsoka nodded.
"I can feel it."
She glanced up as a healer separated herself from a wailing youngling who was being comforted by a Padawan a few years younger than Ahsoka, and came over.
"Now, what do we have here?"
she asked, looking them over.
I fell, Barris told her glumly. She had already stripped off her boots and held up her swollen ankle for inspection, explaining what had happened and the field medicine she and Ahsoka had already done. Ahsoka looked away, studying the other Jedi in the room as Barris and the healer talked shop. She felt it in the Force first, just a faint tremor that made her cock her head and close her eyes. Her mantras, which she wasn't any good at using anyway, didn't tell her anything, and for a moment Ahsoka thought that the threads of what she had felt were slipping away, just another shadow in the dark cloud of the Force. Then she felt it again, closer and clearer, and opened her eyes. Every Jedi in the room must have sensed it too, because they had all stopped whatever they were doing in order to look around for the source of the disturbance in the Force. Wait, Barris began, the pain in her ankle apparently forgotten. Isn't that... Master Yoda! Ahsoka was on her feet in an instant, along with every other able-bodied Jedi in the room. Yoda, leaning more heavily on his gimmer stick than she had ever seen him before, came tottering out through the doors leading to the private rooms, followed by Vokara Che, the chief healer. Everyone knew that he had been attacked and badly injured several weeks ago, and had been in a coma ever since. Rumor was that it was Obi-Wan Kenobi who had done it. But Ahsoka knew that that couldn't be true, since he'd been a Trade Federation prisoner at the time. Ahsoka hadn't heard that he'd regained consciousness. That was why he had a proxy in the Council. "Master Yoda, you need to sit down and let me run a scan," Master Che said, her hands fluttering in protest. "You've been unconscious for weeks." Yoda wrapped his gimmer stick heavily on the floor and nearly fell over. A dozen Jedi tensed, stopping just short of lunging to catch him. "Needed I am," he said, his voice even creakier than usual from disuse. "Dark deeds there are. Clouded the forces. Master Yoda, you need to sit down and let me run a scan," Master Che repeated firmly. "The High Council is handling it." Someone grabbed Ahsoka's elbow. She looked down to see Barris staring frantically at her. "Kenobi," she hissed. Ahsoka glanced around the room, realizing that no one else was going to bring up the trial to Yoda. She swallowed and stepped forward. "Master Yoda?" Vokara Che looked at her sharply, making a distracted gesture with her hands. Her intent was clear. "Don't tell him!" "Sorry," Ahsoka mouthed at her, then said again, "Master Yoda, there's something you should know."
The members of the Confederate Congress in the dying days of the Galactic Republic were a mixed bunch, to say the least. At best, they were unlikely allies drawn together by their mutual distaste for the oppressive policies of the Republic. At their worst, they were actively hostile to each other, individual members scrambling to better themselves at the cost of their fellows. Alongside such idealists as Bail Organa of Alderaan, Satine Cries of Mandalore, and Mina Bonteri of Onderon, were those delegates and planetary leaders who had clutched onto the Confederacy as the most likely path to galactic power. Chitro of Pentora, the Ensai Malak of Devaron, and, of course, Palpatine of Naboo. Most delegates fell somewhere in the middle of these two extremes. The origins of the Confederate Congress preceded the secession of Naboo by nearly a decade. 3 years after the liberation of Naboo, while Sovereign System of Naboo versus Trade Federation raged in the Galactic Supreme Courts, Padme Amidala began making quiet inquiries among the planetary leaders of other systems who had reasons to be discontented with the Republic, eventually forming the Alliance for Galactic Reform. At the time, the word secession had not even been voiced. Amidala's intent was to limit the power of the Commerce Guilds by purely legal means. Early members of the Alliance for Galactic Reform, not to be confused with the later Alliance of Sovereign Systems, included Naboo, of course, Sereno, Alderaan, Chandrilla, Mandalore, Ryloth, Onderon, and more than 300 others. Although publicly supportive of the Alliance's stated goals, and going so far as to call them laudable in an interview with Galaxy 9 Holonews, then Supreme Chancellor Palpatine dismissed the Alliance as hopelessly idealistic and out of touch with reality in a private memo to the Special Operations Bureau. Despite this, SOB kept a close eye on the members of the Alliance, who at the time busied themselves by doing nothing more harmful than a handful of Senate addresses and Holonews interviews. All of this changed a year later, when Naboo versus Trade Federation, a court case that had gone on for almost 4 years, ended in a mistrial after it was revealed that the Chief Justice had been bribed by the Trade Federation to rule against Naboo. Padmé Amidala, whom the Holonews had previously delighted in portraying as a shy, naive teenager who served as a figurehead for the real rulers of the Naboo, the members of the Royal Advisory Council, and who was far out of her depth when it came to galactic politics, reacted to this announcement with what was viewed as uncharacteristic fury. At the time, she and her retinue were on Coruscant for the court proceedings. Paparazzi filmed her out and about with her personal bodyguard and lover, the infamous Obi-Wan Kenobi, and they were attending the opera with Senator Bail Organa of Alderaan and his wife, Queen Brea Antilles Organa, when the mistrial was announced. According to observer accounts, Organa's aide waited for the intermission to enter the box and notify Organa of the court's findings. Organa grimaced at the news and leaned over to inform Amidala and Kenobi, adding that several dozen Holonews reporters were waiting outside for her reaction. Queen Amidala did not disappoint. She conferred with Kenobi and the Organas for a few minutes, then delivered a speech on the steps of the Galactic Opera House that, within hours, had been transmitted from the Core Worlds to the Outer Rim. Flanked by Kenobi and the Organas, Amidala's speech lasted for 17 minutes and was apparently extemporaneous, with no prior rehearsal or any preparation at all. Any prior conviction that Padmé Amidala of Naboo was a fluff-headed teenager with no political acumen was blown to shreds within a matter of minutes. In her speech, Amidala brutally excoriated the Galactic Senate, the Supreme Chancellor, the Galactic Supreme Court, the Jedi Order, and the Trade Federation. She was eloquent, passionate, and well-informed. If delivered by a less canny political operative, her speech might have sounded like pure ranting, but from Amidala, it was nothing of the sort. She concluded with a line whose repercussions would only later be understood. If the government of the Galactic Republic is no longer willing or able to function as it was meant to, by and for the people, then I see no further reason why the system of Naboo, or indeed why any system, should continue to give it our tax credits, our military support, or even our continued allegiance. It was the first time Amidala had ever broached the threat of secession from the Galactic Republic. Initially, no one knew what to make of the statement. Amidala refused to meet with the Supreme Chancellor and returned to Naboo with her retinue, where she issued a second statement from the Palace of Theed. Although her second speech was less bald in its threats, the gauntlet had been thrown, and certain systems in the Alliance for Galactic Reform hastily began to dissociate themselves from Naboo. Others, previously wary of the Alliance, began making overtures towards Amidala. The separatist crisis had begun. Secession was, however, a radical move that even Amidala was unwilling to make while any other option remained. Although the suggestion was bandied about the Senate with increasing frequency over the next 5 years, at several points it seemed that the crisis would blow over without any serious action. The election of Dooku of Sereno as the new Supreme Chancellor initially promised a change in the Republic's policies, as he finally forced the Trade Federation to issue a formal apology to Naboo for the occupation now 6 years past. The sincerity of the Federation's apology was, however, quickly proven false when they bombed Amidala's third coronation as Queen of Naboo, resulting in nearly a dozen deaths and over 100 injuries, including Amidala herself. Though never acknowledged by the Crown of Naboo, it is commonly accepted that Amidala miscarried as a result of the Trade Federation attack, as she was visibly pregnant during the coronation, but not so in her next public appearance. Although Dooku had been an early sympathizer to the Alliance for Galactic Reform, as Supreme Chancellor, he was forced to dissociate himself from what was increasingly being viewed as a radical fringe group. As discontent within the Republic began to grow, Amidala gathered more and more supporters. Small systems without Senate representation, systems who had in the past clashed with the Federation or other commerce guilds, systems who had been negatively affected by recent or historical Senate policies, and systems led by individuals who saw the Alliance as an easy road to galactic power. Events came to a head a decade after the invasion of Naboo, almost to the month. Returning to Coruscant to continue negotiations with Dooku and the Galactic Senate, the Naboo Royal Starship was bombed and destroyed, killing Senator Ali Tamriel and several dozen members of Queen Amidala's retinue, apparently including Amidala herself, which the Holonet immediately reported. Amidst the chaos in the Senate that followed this announcement, chaos not untinged by relief, Amidala appeared in the Naboo repulsor pod, accompanied by Obi-Wan Kenobi. Warned in advance of assassination attempts, the pair had traveled separately to Coruscant. Amidala addressed the Senate. Then, along with a dozen other members of the Alliance for Galactic Reform, met briefly with Supreme Chancellor Dooku and leading members of the Jedi High Council. The minutes of this meeting were not recorded, but it did not last longer than half an hour. Immediately afterwards, Amidala and Kenobi left Coruscant. 27 hours later, shortly after returning to Theed, Queen Amidala announced Naboo's secession from the Galactic Republic due to irreconcilable differences. In the days that followed Naboo's secession, dozens of systems followed suit, many of them members of the Alliance for Galactic Reform, which had split into two groups, the Alliance of Sovereign Systems and the Delegation of 2000. Initially led by Amidala, the Alliance of Sovereign Systems formed a loose coalition of separatist systems bound together by verbal pledges of mutual support. The Delegation of 2000, led by Bail Organa and Senator Mon Mothma of Chandrila, represented those systems, at the time unwilling to commit to secession, but still eager to reunite the broken Republic by peaceful means. Within 3 years, all 2,168 systems in the somewhat misnamed Delegation of 2000 would secede as well. Amidala's tenure as leader of the Alliance of Sovereign Systems did not last long, largely because the Alliance of Sovereign Systems had no desire to be led. The secession of one system, even a small group of systems, as the Separatists initially seemed to be, ought not to have threatened the massive Galactic Republic. No matter how public and popular a figure Queen Amidala was, she was ultimately still only the ruler of a small, rather backwater, system in the mid-rim. However, what nobody seemed to have considered was that Amidala's intention was not merely to withdraw Naboo from the Galactic Republic, but to replace the Republic with an entirely new institution. Palace, oh. Coruscant burning. The Great Galactic War and the Fall of the Republic. Alderaan. University of Alderaan Press.
Amidala didn't bother to change before going into the holoconference room. Just pushed the loose strands of her dark hair behind her ears, and waved off the handmaiden who approached her with a small pot of gold paint. "They all know what I look like. There's no point, and I'm sick of the blasted stuff anyway," she said, then swept into the room and settled into her throne, a little incongruous in the same clothes as the rest of her handmaidens, and without any of the royal regalia. Obi-Wan followed her in, standing in the spot Sabe indicated, next to Padme, and out of the holocom's pickup range, though he could see the three wavering figures opposite the throne clearly. Baylor Gata, he recognized immediately, of course. The senator, former senator, Obi-Wan supposed, and current prince consort of Alderaan looked little different than he had the last time Obi-Wan had seen him, running a mercy mission on Teleroth during the Republic's defense of the planet. The two women were both strangers, a tall woman in Naboo fleet uniform, and another woman, slight and dark-haired, in civilian dress.
"That's Admiral Gina Rione and Lydia Sagahan, one of the Queen's handmaidens," Padme murmured quietly to him. "She's serving as the Queen's representative in the First Fleet."
Obi-Wan nodded.
"I was beginning to think you'd gotten lost, Gina," Amidala said, her voice warm with good humor.
"Not yet, my lady," said the Admiral. "Maybe next time. How's the home front?"
"No longer on fire, which is about all I can say at the moment," Amidala said. She rested an elbow on the arm of her throne, propping her chin on her fist.
"It's good to see you again, Bail. I'm sorry we couldn't get you home to Brea."
Bail Organa shrugged.
"These things happen,"
he said.
"Granted, I wasn't exactly thinking about this when I told her I'd be away from Alderaan for a while, but at least she knows I'm alive, which is more than she knew 2 weeks ago."
"I'm certainly glad that you are, though not as happy as Brea, I'm sure," Amidala said. She glanced at Lydia Sagahan, whose only response was to raise one eyebrow and nod very slightly.
"What did you find out?" "I have received reliable information since the last time we spoke that the Republic does have several ways to disable the relays that we weren't previously aware of."
They do?"
Bail Organa said, sounding surprised.
"Who's your source? I've never heard anything about that, and it should have been in at least one SOB briefing."
"I'm afraid his identity is classified at the moment," Amidala said, and Obi-Wan shifted uneasily, fighting back his automatic wave of guilt. He liked Amidala, liked her very much, which had surprised him a little, but he had still given up classified information to an avowed enemy of the Republic, even if it wasn't in his own universe. Amidala didn't look at him or make any other indication that the source in question was in the same room. Instead, all she said was, "What did you find out? You were certainly gone long enough."
"We wanted to be certain, my lady,"
Rione said.
She clasped her hands behind her back, brisk and professional. "I sent out 6 task forces consisting of battlecruisers and light escorts in order to investigate the communications outage, checking a total of 2,732 Holonet relays in as many systems. All of them are completely cold. The communications engineers who inspected as many of the relays as possible reported that it appears to be a network error that took them offline, rather than an attack, since there's no physical damage to the relays themselves."
"I've been informed that it's next to impossible for a network error to take the Holonet offline," Amidala said. "There are too many redundancies built into the system in order to prevent something like this from happening. And the 2 relays in the Naboo system are fine." Rione grimaced.
"That's what my engineers told me.
The rest of her words were lost in a crackle of static, as the holograms flickered and nearly vanished. Amidala leaned forward on her throne.
"Admiral Rione!"
One of her handmaidens leaned over to check the holocom. "It's on their end, my lady." A moment later, the hologram returned, all 3 figures looking off to one side, Rione speaking to someone who was out of their holoprojector's pickup range. Lydia saw them first and said,
"Admiral, we're back."
"Is this something we should be concerned with, Gina?" Amidala asked.
"With most of the relays down, our signal is only bouncing off about a third of the usual,"
Lydia said.
"Sometimes fewer. Calm says it's unavoidable. We might lose a signal again, though we should be able to shoot through a flash message if that happens."
"Then you had better speak quickly," Amidala said, raising her eyebrows. "Was it done deliberately?"
"All the communications engineers say that it must have been,"
Admiral Rione said.
"Whether it was done by the Republic or an independent slicer, we have no way to tell. It's just barely conceivable that a slicer could have managed it, even though that seems unlikely. All my engineers say that they couldn't have done it, and they're all very good."
"To what end? What does that accomplish?"
"We don't know,"
Olivier said simply. Amidala's gaze flickered to Obi-Wan and Padme. Have any of your task forces seen evidence of Republic troops gathering? It's the only reason I can think of for a communications blackout on this scale. If Dooku thinks that he can end the war early, he'll risk the economic fallout that has to be coming from this. From the little we've heard, the Commerce Guild's already in uproar, and my contact in the banking clan says they're in meltdown. Clovis? Obi-Wan whispered to Padme, who nodded slightly. I didn't ask for details, or tell Anakin. Wise decision. Obi-Wan had vivid memories of Anakin's mostly incoherent ranting about Rush Clovis a few years ago, most of which had dealt with his presumption for propositioning Padme, and very little to do with the fact that he had been committing treason against the Republic.
We're not sure,
Rioni told Amidala.
Intelligence and the task forces managed to pick up in-system traffic that wasn't dependent on the relays, but whatever the Republic's trying to do, they're probably keeping it close to Coruscant. They're fairly certain, though not positive, that the Republic pulled warships out of some of the planetary defense patrols. If they did, none of them were from the systems we were able to travel through, since we had to stick to separatist-friendly systems.
Bail Organa leaned forward, his image and the first few syllables wavering as the connection dimmed.
I managed to get in touch with some of my contacts still in the Republic. The Senate's still tied up on Coruscant, but some of the others were able to come through for me. They don't know anything about the breakdown, but what they do know is that Dooku called an emergency Senate session immediately after Sereno and Gaius. Closed session. No cameras, no public record.
Do you know what was discussed?
No one who sat in on that session has left Coruscant since before comms went down, and speaking about closed sessions is a criminal offense, which doesn't stop anyone from doing it. But if they are, I'm not hearing about it.
Amidala tapped a gold-painted nail against her chin. You know the Senate better than I do, Bail. What gets discussed in those closed sessions? He grimaced.
The ones I've sat in on? Military actions, lawsuits against Senate members, or planets with Senate representation, anything controversial. A lot of what went on with the Trade Federation and the occupation of Naboo happened in closed sessions, though I was only present for the end of that.
But you have a guess?
Knowing Dooku?
Bail said.
You pushed him, Padme. Dooku isn't Palpatine. If you push him hard enough, he's going to push back, and the Republic lost too much this time to just take it again. My gut tells me the Republic is gearing up for a major military strike at the Confederacy, and they took the holonet down so we, wouldn't see it coming.
Amidala nodded. Any idea of the target? Any of you?
Something that'll make a splash,
Rioni suggested.
Know where there's fighting now. Something new.
In other words, no idea, Amidala said. Her gaze flickered to Obi-Wan and Padme. Padme shook her head, and Obi-Wan hesitated, thinking through his own experience with Dooku's tactics and the Galactic Senate's ideas of good military tactics, and trying to decide who would win in a battle of wills.
No, Your Highness,
Rioni said, grimacing a little. So we're back at square one. No comms, no idea what the Republic's up to, and no way to find out. That, and a third of the Confederacy's out of comms range. The Queen tapped her fingernails lightly on the arm of her throne, the gesture studied and deliberate.
We dropped enough emergency relays that we can punch through flash messages to most of the Corps,
Rioni offered apologetically.
We're out now. If something else goes down, then we're crift, if you'll excuse the expression, m'lady.
I've heard worse, Amidala said, as you're aware. Rioni's teeth showed for an instant in a grin. Then Bail Organa said,
Padme, there's something else.
Of course there is. What is it?
We couldn't make it through to the Corps, but one of the task forces dropped relays close enough we could get messages to Alderaan. Rhea and Mon have been talking with some of the other delegation worlds, the ones that have their own emergency relay systems, or close enough that they can run messages the old-fashioned way.
Starship to starship, in other words. Or starship to planet. Eden's system was about as far as communications could reach without using the holonet relays. Amidala nodded, her mouth tightening. What did Queen Brea say?
The delegation worlds are spooked, Padme. Some of them are claiming they didn't know what they were getting into. They want to recant and go back to the Republic. Having the relays down isn't helping. They haven't heard from the rest of the Confederacy. They haven't heard from the Congress. They haven't heard from you, and now they know, or suspect, that Dooku's up to something. Some people think that Dooku's going to force the delegation systems back into the Republic.
Even the Senate isn't stupid enough to attack one of the core worlds, Amidala said. The delegation worlds and the core... Bail spread his hands, his image flickering.
Can you blame them, Padme? No one knows what's going on. All they know is that the Republic is probably gathering troops and they can't communicate with anyone. Not the Senate, not the Supreme Chancellor, not the Congress, and not you.
The Congress is meeting in 10 standard days on Raxus, Amidala said. When their delegates arrive, then...
They might not send delegates, Padme. There's no way to let most of them know about the new congressional session in a way they'd trust.
Bail's gaze was steady.
Brea and Mon can contact most of them, but I think we're going to lose at least 100 worlds.
Core worlds, Amidala said. Back to the Republic. Not to the Alliance or the Huts.
Yeah.
He nodded. Amidala steepled her hands and tipped them towards her chin. Admiral, how far into the core can the First Fleet travel before running into significant resistance? I've been informed that a military force could make it to Chandrilla before being detected, but you're on the ground, so to speak. Rianne considered for a moment.
I'd say that's accurate, my lady. You want to take the First Fleet to Chandrilla?
Bail said doubtfully.
Padme, I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Not that I don't believe in scaring the living daylights out of anyone who thinks they can just waltz in and out of the Confederacy when it suits them, my lady, Rave put in. But I'm not sure my navy's bigger than yours is the best. Amidala raised one finger, cutting her off. I have no intention of attempting to use the First Fleet to intimidate any system to remain in or to join the Confederacy. That choice is up to those systems. However, I have no problem reminding the systems in question that the Confederacy is not only capable, but willing to protect its members. They may have forgotten that in the core. Bail still looked dubious.
The delegation worlds in the core... The core worlds are different than anywhere else, Padme. We're the oldest systems in the Republic. Taking a war fleet into the core is going to be seen as a threat, Padme, no matter how you dress it up.
Amidala's gaze flickered to Obi-Wan so quickly that he wasn't sure he had seen it. Can Brea and Mon get delegates from those worlds to Alderaan within about 5 standard days? Bail frowned.
Yes, but the delegates won't listen to them.
But they'll listen to me, Amidala said. Everyone in the room stared at her. After a moment, Bail said.
Yes.
Tell Brea and Mon to get them to Alderaan any way they can. I'll see what I can do to reassure them before the Congress meets. She turned her attention to Rione as Bail nodded, his eyes a little wide. Admiral, is the First Fleet still in the Dalling system? Good. That's a little more than 16 hours in hyperspace away from Naboo. Rione dipped her head in acknowledgement.
As a straight shot, yes. But the Republic controls the Gamon Run. A Confederate flagged ship will never make it through, especially one with a military escort. You'll have to divert through the outer room into hut space, and that will triple your travel time.
Not if I don't take a Confederate flagged ship or a military escort, Amidala said. All 7 of the handmaidens, not counting Padme and including Lydia, were staring at her in horror. Sabe sounded like she was having a coronary as she demanded, "What ship are you thinking of, my lady?" Amidala smiled.
Someone get me Captain Skywalker. Quinlan didn't need the Force to tell him that there was a slightly frantic edge to Obi-Wan that hadn't been there before. Obi-Wan hadn't been particularly optimistic about the trial when it had first started, and now he was even less so. Quinlan hadn't realized that was possible. He'd never really thought about pessimism as one of Obi-Wan's traits, which, in retrospect, had been a mistake. Obi-Wan wasn't the kid he'd been 13 years ago, which intellectually Quinlan knew, but which he'd always had trouble coming to terms with. He never had that problem with Aayla, but then again, he'd practically raised Aayla. Obi-Wan he'd only seen half a dozen times between his resignation from the Order and now. On the previous occasions, Obi-Wan had always been fairly upbeat, in his own territory and comfortable with it. Right now, he was neither, and it was wearing on him. And since it was wearing on him, Obi-Wan seemed compelled to make sure that everyone who had to deal with him was as miserable as possible, whether they were on his side or the Council's. Thulm was probably right when he said it was a little petty for a Darksider, but it wasn't exactly winning him any friends. There was defiance in every line of Obi-Wan's body, gaunter than ever after 2 weeks of captivity without access to the Force. He had his shoulders back and his chin tipped up, matching Windu glare for glare. If Quinlan had been able to sense him in the Force, he knew that Obi-Wan would be seething. "I am not a dark Jedi," he said flatly. "For the 100th or 200th time, Masters, I am not a dark Jedi. I do not now, nor have I ever used the dark side of the Force, nor would I if the opportunity was presented to me, which it has been, as you know." He bit the words off, his fingers flexing in his binders. "You think that I'm a dark Jedi? A Sith? Then take the collar off and read me. I couldn't hide that from 12 masters, even if I wanted to." 14 masters and one knight, Quinlan corrected silently, raising his gaze to roll his eyes at the ceiling. Obi-Wan wasn't counting his advocates. It wasn't the first time Obi-Wan had said as much to the Council. It had come up at least twice a day since the trial began. "You know we won't agree to that, Captain Kenobi," Saisi-Teen said. Obi-Wan tilted his head slightly to one side, like a curious raptor. "It's a pity you won't," he said. "You might actually get an answer to the question you keep asking me. Of course, it's not going to be the one you want." Next to Quinlan, Tra-Sa rested her forehead against her fingertips, wincing, and Thulm said gruffly, "Why did that boy have to get all of Qui-Gon's bad habits?" Quinlan had missed Teen's response, but Obi-Wan snorted and said, "If I was a Sith or a dark Jedi, Master Teen, you think I would have let that cell on the cruiser hold me? I can think of 3 ways I could have escaped it if I didn't mind killing, or worse, a Jedi." Given that he'd been one of those Jedi, Quinlan couldn't stop his automatic flinch and saw Obi-Wan's gaze flicker towards him for an instant before he looked back at the Council. "Why didn't you?" Even Pyle asked. "Because, as I've told you 1,000 times, I don't kill Jedi," Obi-Wan snapped. "Find me the dark Jedi who'd balk at admitting that, Master Pyle. Find me the Sith who wouldn't revel in telling you how he ripped a Jedi apart, how he killed them slowly and painfully, who clawed at their mind to open them up from the inside out, and who laughed while he did it."
"You seem to speak from experience."
That was the dark woman, who was watching Obi-Wan with a flat, expressionless gaze.
"I've met more Sith than anyone in the Jedi Order," Obi-Wan said.
"Strange coincidence, that."
"Maybe the Force was testing me," Obi-Wan said. "Just like it's testing me now."
"Is that what you think this is, Kenobi? A test?" "I'm under no illusions about what this is, Master Kuro," Obi-Wan said, making her stiffen. The Dark Woman had renounced her given name decades past. Since Quinlan didn't even know what it was, he had no idea how Obi-Wan had discovered that tidbit.
I know a witch hunt when I see one.
This is hardly a witch hunt, Upalrancis has said, given the overwhelming proof.
Rumors and half-truths, Obi-Wan snapped. What exactly is overwhelming about it? I broke my vows, I admit it. I confessed it 12 years ago. I killed men, I did it in cold blood. I used the Force to help me because we are Jedi masters. The Force is in our bones, in our souls. I could no more forsake it than I could cut off my own hands. So, yes, I used the Force to do what had to be done for the good of Naboo. I confess it freely. 12 years ago, I told you the same thing. I did things that no Jedi should have done, and I left the Order because of it. But I never turned to the dark side. I would cut my own throat if I ever even thought about it.
That wasn't news either. Though Obi-Wan wasn't exactly helping himself.
We're not here to discuss the events of 12 years past, Plo Koon reminded the Council as some of them stirred, obviously meaning to challenge this assertion. Obi-Wan's glare could have cut through Durasteel.
I've killed men and women, he said. There is no Jedi in this room who hasn't done so. Are their deaths any better because I used my lightsaber instead of my hands? Are their deaths cleaner because I used my hands instead of the Force?
He snapped his fingers, making a few of the council members flinch.
You want to know if I've killed people with the Force? Yes, I have. I didn't enjoy it, and I won't do it again unless I have no other choice. Name me the Jedi who wouldn't do the same in the direst of need.
The difference is, Mace Windu said softly, you aren't a Jedi, Obi-Wan, as you keep reminding us.
Then don't judge me as one, Obi-Wan spat.
You know we can't do that.
I know you won't, Obi-Wan said. I'm not entirely sure why you think you can't.
He glared around at the members of the High Council.
I resigned this order. Everyone in the Republic knows that I did. It's no secret, no matter what some of you seem to think. You want to charge me with committing treason against the Republic? Fine! Put me up in front of the Senate or the Supreme Courts. I'm not a citizen of the Republic. I haven't been for years. You think I've committed espionage? Prove it to the Senate. You won't be able to. You think I've committed war crimes? Then I've committed crimes against civilization. I haven't. But you're welcome to try and prove it, because the evidence doesn't exist. I might not be a Jedi anymore. I might not be beholden to the code anymore. But I'm not the monster you seem to think I am.
Then where are Luminara Unduli and Eeth Koth? Jocasta Nu asked.
Obi-Wan shot her an irritated look.
As I have said numerous times, not dead. Which you already knew. Perhaps the Jedi should look to their own glass houses before casting stones.
And what is that supposed to mean?
This order, this council, has betrayed its own principles. It began 13 years ago when Qui-Gon Jinn died on Naboo and the Jedi did nothing. And it's gotten worse since. You allowed the occupation of Naboo to happen, let hundreds of thousands die at the hands of the Trade Federation, let the Sith walk back into this galaxy and kill one of your own, and you accuse me of committing murder? Of turning to the dark side?
Color or not, Quinlan felt the Force stir. Obi-Wan was angry enough and strong enough that some of his fury was starting to leak through the nullifying wards. Some of the council members tensed as well, their hands drifting closer to the lightsabers.
Obi-Wan didn't seem to notice.
I'm not Dooku of Sereno. I won't blame the Jedi for Qui-Gon's murder. I was there. I know what happened. And I know what didn't happen. I know that this order allowed itself to be hamstrung by the Senate rather than follow its remit, that it allowed itself to be used and manipulated to act against systems and individuals for the will of the Senate, not the good of the people or even the good of the Republic. The Jedi have been twisted and corrupted beyond all recognition of what they once were, so that when there are Sith out there today, now, plotting against the Republic, against the Confederacy, even against the Alliance and the Hutts, you busy yourself with me because you're too blind to see that there is true evil in the galaxy, even when it walks in the front door and announces itself.
Those are very bold words, young Obi-Wan, Plo Koon said.
It's the truth, Master Koon, Obi-Wan said, a little more courteously than he'd offered to the others. I've been out there. You haven't.
The Jedi Order is not on trial here, Ki-Adi Mundi said. You are, Captain Kenobi.
I've noticed, Obi-Wan snapped.
You what? Mace Windu began, then blinked and turned towards the door an instant before they slid open. Master Yoda came in slowly, leaning heavily on his gimmer stick and trailed by Plo Koon's Padawan Ahsoka Tano. She stopped in the entrance to the room, hesitating, then moved to Quinlan's side as Plo made a faint gesture with one hand. Obi-Wan had turned to look at Yoda, and after a moment of stunned surprise, he executed the deep bow of a senior Padawan to the Grand Master of the Order, probably not aware of what form he'd used until he was straightening up again.
A serious matter, this is, Yoda said, looking around the room.
Jocasta Nu stood up without being prompted, leaving Yoda's chair open for him, and he made his way slowly over it, not speaking until he had settled himself comfortably in his seat.
Dangerous it is to judge any Jedi for what only the Force can truly know.
Obi-Wan Kenobi is not a Jedi, Seiseteen pointed out.
Jedi he was born. Jedi he has lived. Jedi he shall die, Yoda said.
Obi-Wan flinched on the last word.
Jedi he is.
I resigned the order, Master, Obi-Wan said quietly. You know that.
The order a Jedi is not, Yoda said. To stop being Jedi, impossible it is, vows broken or not. Make a Jedi keeping to the code does not. Jedi still a broken Jedi is.
Obi-Wan's eyes fluttered shut, just for an instant.
A great crime Obi-Wan Kenobi is accused of committing, Yoda said. Judged by this council, he cannot be. Only by the Force can he be judged.
Obi-Wan stared at him, horrified realization dawning on his face.
Master Yoda! Take his trials, Obi-Wan must, Yoda said. Judge him, the Force shall.
All the color went out of Obi-Wan's face. For a moment, Quinlan thought that he would collapse, and tensed to go and catch him. But somehow, Obi-Wan kept his footing.
Only a Jedi can take the trials of knighthood, he said. And I am not...
Yoda wrapped his gimmer stick against the arm of his chair, cutting him off.
Afraid, are you, of what the Force will find inside you?
Yes.
The word rang in the suddenly silent chamber.
Good, Yoda said. If there is darkness, find it the Force shall. If there is light, find that the Force shall as well. Jedi you are, Obi-Wan. Too long delayed your trials have been.